Chino, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
No worries, man.
So, talk to us about the new record, Ohms, coming out September 25th. This will be your ninth studio album?
Yeah.
Yeah, ninth studio album.
Ninth record, the official ninth record. We have one that we never quite finished that was never
correct
put out.
And
then
right.
I think we have a couple B-side records and rarity covers records, whatever. But yeah, our official studio album, ninth studio album, out in a week.
So I have a theory here that your guitar player adds a string to his guitar for each new record.
Yeah. You would be correct with that.
Because I think he's up to 9 strings now. At least after watching the new video, I was like, oh my God, he's got 9 strings now. So I'm thinking by the time the next record rolls around, it's going to be a 10 string.
Right. He'll have a harp at some point.
Yeah, right, right. So we're pretty excited about this. I got to tell you, man, 2020 has been a year. But hearing that not only was there going to be a new Deftones record, but that there was going to be the reissue of White Pony was a bright spot in the year. So we're really looking forward to it.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's for us, it's kind of been a, you know, obviously it's been a while, but I think just having, you know, something that we've been working hard on and being able to bury our heads in, you know, kind of take us out of the monotony and the craziness that's going on, but something that we can focus on. So, like, you know, having this, putting this record together and all the final touches on it, whatever, has sort of been something to, you know, for us to focus on for the time being. Excited for it to come out. It'll be a little different for what we're used to. I mean, obviously we'd be on tour right around the time our records usually come out. So this will be interesting to see how it unfolds, but it is nice that hopefully people will dig it and, you know, it'd be something for people to, maybe take their minds off things as well.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to 2021 because you guys you're going to play the Met August 27th of 2021 now with Gojira and Poppy. So we'll wait. We'll patiently wait for you guys. So how's the reaction been so far on the new single?
Yeah, so far the single's been good. I mean, it's always hard to think that this whole record or a whole batch of songs would be kind of first impression is kind of judged off of one song. And to pick that one song that's going to be, you know, sort of whatever is always tough. But I think the representation, I think, of where we're headed, although, you know, the record does kind of go to different places here and there. So I feel like it's a pretty cohesive piece of work, but we definitely expanded, I think, on what we had done in the past. And I think that's what we try to do with every record. So
just going to say that's one of the things I love about your records is they kind of always go in a couple different directions, which, you know, makes them interesting.
I think so. Yeah. It makes it interesting for us, I think, as well, you know, like just musically and being fans of music, to feel like we don't have to fit any certain box at any time. I mean, you know, we feel pretty free to experiment and have fun at the same time. So.
Well, my experience is like I can do yoga to one song and then I feel like I want to run through a wall for the next one. So I go back and forth. You take me from high to low and low to high, but I love it. Sarah, my producer, joins us on this chat too.
Hey, Chino, how's it going?
Hi, Sarah.
First of all, I want to tell you that I love this track, Ohms. We're playing it here on MMR, and the video is really interesting because it's performance footage. It's you guys, but it's cut with like all this post-apocalyptic imagery. And I was wondering, A, did you all record your performance parts individually because we've all been quarantined, or did you get together to record them? And the other thing I wanted to ask is, the end of the video sort of left a cliffhanger that maybe could be continued in future videos, and I was wondering if that was a possibility for the rest of the singles on the album.
So for the first part, part of the question, we filmed everything separately. So the idea was, you know, obviously for us to be together. We all actually live in different parts of the world, or at least the country. So for us to get together is kind of like a, you know, we really have to plan it out. We did have a plan to kind of get together and film it, but last minute, I think everybody just felt it'd probably be best if there's a way we can do it remotely, then let's try it instead of traveling, everybody getting on planes and stuff. So yeah, we had a guy, he came out to each of us individually and we all filmed our parts at home pretty much. And then, you know, just brought a couple lights and a couple cameras. And it's so crazy that he made it, you know, they made it through the editing process and through technology. They made it work, you know, I mean, at least for me watching it, at no point does it seem like, you know, we're not together. So that was kind of neat to see come to fruition. And then the visuals itself were really from the director Raffatoon. It was really his vision. He was able to live with the song for a while, and I think he really pulled some like inspiration from the words and from sort of like the themes that were kind of you know, giving lyrically to the song and put that together. And I as well, at the end of the video, I'm sort of like, yeah, feeling kind of that same way. I mean, the song actually, it's weird because the song, it's formatted kind of in this weird way where you kind of don't know that the song's over. I mean, it kind of goes through every part, but it never goes back to the chorus at the end, whatever. It ends on a bridge of the song. So
yeah.
The song itself kind of sounds like a cliffhanger. You're like, really, that's it? It's already been 4 minutes or whatever? But the video sort of like definitely enhances that feeling for sure.
I was one of the first, I guarantee you, to jump on and do the pre-order for the bundle so I could get some vinyl. And I was really excited about the artwork because you're back with the longtime collaborator Frank Maddox, who also designed the iconic White Pony cover. So does he have a story behind the eyes, or is it just left to the imagination?
It's kind of one of those things that are left up for interpretation. I feel like a lot of our music in general, I mean, you know, there's vibes that kind of that are created, but as far as like being too literal with anything, I think we try to kind of skirt away from that. Obviously, I think it's a powerful image that we all gravitated toward, and sort of the look of it is kind of a throwback to maybe like kind of, you know, 80s, the way that the, I guess, sort of the lo-fi-ness of it, whatever. But yeah, I think it's one of those things that I think just captivated us all in the beginning. Same with the album title, which, you know, the same sort of answer for is that. It's like, you know, we had a few different ideas, and it's one of those things when we can, all five of us can look at something and like instantly agree on something. We know that, you know, we usually made the right decision with, you know, where we go.
Chino, you said something recently that has stuck with me. I've been rattling this around in my brain for a little while. You said that heaviness is subjective, because I'm sure, you know, being in the metal universe, you're always asked like, oh, is this going to be your heaviest record yet? And you said, well, that's subjective. And I thought, you know what? That's really true, because for one person, the heaviest thing in the world might be Five Finger Death Punch. And for the next person, it's Slayer, or maybe it has to do with the lyrics of the music. So what does heavy mean to you musically?
I mean, it can mean a bunch of different things and different aspects. Me personally, I tend to gravitate towards like sort of more emotionally heavy stuff. You know, when I hear when someone says, oh, that's heavy, like I understand like what the first thought of it may be, but whatever. But like, you know, you can listen to some old, like, you know, Hank Williams, and that is heavy, emotionally heavy. And just like, I'm not saying that that's how I would describe Hank Williams, but I would say that there's something heavy about emotionally heavy music, you know what I mean? Music that heaviness, it carries weight, I guess, to it. I guess the more proper word, though, like, I think maybe it was people say it's like, you know, is it metal, I guess, whatever. And I think we've always had metal tendencies in our music. We've never really been, I don't think, like a straight heavy metal band. It's funny because when people ask me, like, say I just meet, I don't know, like a lady at the grocery store or something, she said, well, what kind of music do you make? And I, like, to her, I will say, oh, I'm like in a heavy rock band, I'll say, whatever. Or I won't say heavy metal, because that I think that's just like, I don't know if we fit that, but like, that's the way I would describe it to her. But if some, you know, somebody who knew a little bit more about like subgenres, whatever, you know, music kind of nerd or whatever, I would probably explain it to them a little different, you know what I mean? So I guess it is subjective in that way.
Yeah. So to backtrack just a little bit and talk about what some of us call the Lost album, do you think that will ever be revisited, or is it just too painful to go back there?
No, I mean, we don't really have any plans to. But with that being said, like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I would never say no, because, you know, obviously it exists somewhere. Yeah. And it would definitely take a bit of work. I mean, we'd have to, because it wasn't finished as well. So it's something that we'd have to go in. I'd have to sort of reassess it and finish it, write. I actually have to write words now for music that was written, what is it now, maybe 12 years ago or something like that.
Right.
So
right.
It could be a task, but it's not one that I wouldn't want to tackle at some point. But, you know, it's like every time we get together to make music, like, I think that's the last thing on our mind. It's like we want to sort of create in the moment and you know, and as opposed to like pull something out and then work on it from that, you know, because like I said earlier, we all live in different states. So when we get together, it's like this level of excitement for us to like create something new, like and fresh on the spot is like kind of takes over the need then to pull something out old out. Even songs like we have like songs left over, I guess, from like last writing session from last record or the record before that. And we rarely ever like go back and say, remember that idea from 5 years ago? Like we always just kind of like create in the moment.
Yeah. So I'm always fascinated to learn how people write music. Are you one of those people where the band brings you a track and then you go to work from there? Or do you find that you guys kind of collaborate all in the same room? How does that work?
It happens both ways. For the majority of the time, we're all in the same room, and we kind of just like someone starts playing something and then everybody kind of joins in and we start kind of playing back and forth. There's a few songs that Stefan will bring in, like where he kind of has the whole thing already sort of mapped out part to part, and or send me, or Sergio will send me a demo or something, whatever. And then, so it's all kind of a mixed bag. I mean, you know, the bottom line is I usually think the best, you know, we'll take all that and put it in a bag. And I think the best ideas, the ones that everybody gravitates towards the most, those are what end up taking on a life of their own. And then we'll,
right.
You definitely pick up on that intuitive feel, I think, with Deftones music for sure.
Yeah.
You can also pick up on how you sort of react to the music without any sort of set plan. And like you said, you don't revisit the past, you just move forward. And I know that Jackson and I, as fans of Deftones, really enjoy that momentum. I wanted to ask a question about White Pony. I was thinking about albums that came out in 2000 in that era, and you know, White Pony was so unique, and another album that came out that year was Hybrid Theory from Linkin Park, also a very unique album. And I know that Mike Shinoda sort of fields this question all the time of, when is there going to be a Hybrid Theory Part 2, or will there ever be a Hybrid Theory Part 2, because it was so great. And I know that he says, you know, that was lightning in a bottle. We couldn't recreate it if we tried, but even if we could, we don't want to. So do you get pressure to duplicate White Pony in that sense?
Not so much. You know, obviously that's probably one of our most commercially successful albums as well, and it's one of my favorites, a lot of people's favorite records. But I agree with Mike in a lot of the ways where it's like, you know, obviously, you know, moving forward and like, more than anything, I don't even know if we could, you know what I mean? It's in the same way that Lightning in a Bottle thing was kind of, you know, that record is very much for its time. So it could come off sort of contrived if we tried to do that at the same time. You don't understand what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
So I understand what Mike's saying about that. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And to ever try to sort of replicate something that you did in the past, I mean, we can always take influence from it, I think. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think always the idea is, like what I said earlier, is just like, when we get together, it's being in that moment and then, you know, trudging forward.
Sarah referred to the album as unique. I will refer to it as one of the best rock records ever released, because in my opinion, it is just a mind-blowingly good record. And I chatted with you a few years ago, and I was talking about how it's one of those records for me. Music always has this amazing ability to be able to kind of transport you to any place in time, you know, and kind of take you back to the past, and you can, it's almost like you're there. You can taste the taste, you can smell the smells, you can,
oh, for sure,
you know, and that's one of those records that does that for me. The good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. But I can pull that out and just time travel with that thing.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I have lots of records, you know, that I love that do that same thing for me. So that's awesome that one of our records can do that for, you know, for anybody. That's a good feeling.
Yeah. So when's the reissue going to come out? That's the big question.
I think the plan is, I think November, obviously, we're trying to have it out for this year because it is the 20th anniversary. So that's the plan. Yeah, it'll be accompanied by a remix record. So we have the whole record remixed, pretty much the same record turned inside out by, like, you know, different artists. So that for us was like really, really cool because it was kind of a self-indulgent type of a thing for us, but it actually turned out very good. I think the record sort of stands on it's called The Black Stallion. I feel like it sort of stands on its own as well. So we're pretty excited for people to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually really excited to hear that. And obviously it sucks not being able to play live with all this stuff that's going on in the world. That's just madness. But in your opinion, do you think it's going to have any lasting effects on the industry and live music and how people consume music and purchase music?
It's hard to say that it won't, you know what I mean? But, you know, obviously we hope that things at some point will get to the point where we can, you know, all be in the same room sweating and yelling and screaming and enjoying, you know, that live music. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really miss. This has been probably one of the biggest hiatuses that we've had, because even before the pandemic and stuff, we were kind of off writing a record. So it's been quite a while since we've been on tour. It seems like a lifetime ago, you know, since we've been able to enjoy being with our friends and enjoying music. So I'm hoping so. I think everybody is. But I think we just kind of take it day by day. Right now, our focus is just getting this record out and having people hear it. And hopefully it'll tie people over for a while.
Yeah, it's funny you were saying being in the same room, you know, singing and sweating, and I just had a flashback.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to imagine, huh?
Yeah, well, I just had a flashback of when I was a kid, and I was front row at an AC/DC concert, and you know Angus Young, man, he was like a spider on crack, dude. He was just like, but midway through the show, he's just covered in sweat, and he comes up to the front of the stage, and he's, you know, swinging his hair, and we're just like getting just pelted with his sweat. And I remember going home telling my parents, and they were like, how was the show? I was like, it was amazing. I am covered in Angus Young's sweat. And they just thought it was the weirdest thing. I was like, no, you had to be there.
So my first reaction to you saying that, Jackson, was, wow, that's really gross. And then my second thought was, but man, I would give anything to feel that right now.
I know.
Oh man. Speaking of,
not to be weird, Chino, but I would not mind you throwing sweat all over us.
Oh my lord. So virtual concerts have sort of taken the place of this. By the way, Deftones will be in Philly next summer. It's a while to wait, but August 27th, the date on that show. And the lineup is great with Gojira and Poppy. But in the meantime, any thoughts to do a virtual concert of some sort?
We don't have any plans right now to do one. That's not to say that at some point we won't. It sucks because, it's like hard, you know, we're just talking about those live concerts. It's like really, it's such a different thing. It's not the same. Even rehearsing, we haven't like been in the same room for like 6 months. You know what I mean? I haven't seen any of my bandmates in that long. So like, you know, we would have to get together and rehearse. It would be a lot, you know, to take on. We could do it. I think it would just take a lot of planning. But at this point, we don't really have any definitive plans to do with that.
Well, I'm hoping that this kind of all blows over before we have to put too much more thought into
it. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Good point.
So file this under you learn something new every day. And I thought I was a fan, but I recently read something in Rolling Stone. And they were talking about, Maynard James, Keenan singing on Passenger, which is just such an epic song. But then it went on to talk about Scott Weiland playing a part in RX Queen, and that he was actually singing backup vocals on that. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's like this really sort of, I don't want to say it was a hidden kind of an Easter egg kind of thing in the record, but it was one of those things that it wasn't really announced. The way it happened was pretty organic as well. It was towards the end of the record making process, and I'd met up with him at a studio in Burbank, and I was playing him some of the rough things, the music, and he put it up and he pulled out a microphone and he started just kind of like doing his Scott Weiland kind of scatty stuff over it a little bit, whatever. And then he started kind of harmonizing with me on the choruses, like singing this lower register melody. And I was like, well, that sounds pretty cool, whatever. He's like, yeah, I mean, you can re-sing it if you want, whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then we mixed the record and I kind of just said his voice sounds kind of good on there. It was what it was, and yeah, it was pretty neat. Like, you know, if you listen hard enough, you can totally hear his, you know, his timber and like the way that he sings. I mean, it's totally him, you know, but it was kind of cool the way it happened, where it wasn't anything that we kind of promoted. It was kind of just like a little Easter egg, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, I'm going to put that in my headphones tonight and listen to it. That's going to be great. Uh-huh. That's going to be great. Well, dude, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. We're super excited about this new record. We're equally excited for the reissue of White Pony and of course, the remix, which just sounds like it's going to be fantastic. So here's to getting through this crap, man, and I hope we see you live on a stage in Philadelphia soon.
I hope too, man. I hope so too.
All right, man. Have a great day. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. All right, buddy. Great talking to you guys.
See ya.
Take care.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.